welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's guest is Angela Pai from California-based Statehouse Holdings. This conversation was recorded in person during the Emerald Cup Harvest Ball on December 11th, 2022.
Into kind of this start of your career in cannabis, you know, I do want to talk about kind of what drew you originally to the industry and what kind of made you want to make this, you know, your career path.
Well, my foray into cannabis is about 4 years ago. So I've had a couple of decades of working in the global creative industry for advertising, so advertising industry. And then from there, I went into fashion. So it was a CMO for Halston. Nice. And then from Halston, I transitioned into cannabis. Now, cannabis found me.
Sometimes how it happens, yeah.
Cannabis found me. I definitely fell in love with the Popham Barkley story, with the origin story of just the heartfelt intention of doing something so purposeful and so loving that you want to help someone such as your family to heal and be well. So I fell in love with Adam's story at Popham Barkley. And at the time, a really good friend of mine named Christina had noticed that Popham Barkley was looking for a CMO. And we were having breakfast one day and she goes, you know, you should really check out this company. It's a really wonderful company. It's doing great things. It has a strong brand and it's so intentional. I think you would love it. So I did a lot of research. I watched all the videos that were available online. And on one of Adam's podcasts, he actually gave out his email address. So I sent him an email and let him know about my interest and what I felt so powerful about the intention of the brand to be wellness-oriented and to help unleash the power of cannabis to help people's lives. After having reached out to him, he actually wrote me back same day. 6 weeks later, I was hired on, and that was just, you know, hit the ground running. And what, you know, I can't imagine a better brand to fall in love with cannabis from the very beginning, from the sourcing from small family farms up in Humboldt, having the operation that it has almost family-oriented in Eureka and creating solventless whole plant medicine for people in a safe and accessible way.
Well, and the Real Leaf Balm is absolutely fantastic. And the thing about Popham Barkley with that Real Leaf Balm is, again, driven for medical purposes, really focused on the medical side of things, which when you're looking at, you know, brand stories, it's kind of rare to see somebody with a kind of personal connection needing for that medical side of things. When you kind of got onto Popham Barkley and then you kind of made your transition, what was the one thing that you kind of thought was the most challenging having to deal now with a regulated, you know, industry versus, say, a deregulated industry? Obviously, from a marketing perspective, extremely different problem.
For sure. And it's certainly one of the catch fire type points when you speak to marketers within the cannabis space in terms of the limited number of channels that you have available. I think what I quickly realized is that cannabis is the boots on the ground kind of business. It's being able to engage with someone and really capturing that first cannabis conversation with a product that you believe in that's actually efficacious. Because if somebody's looking for plant-oriented solutions for sleep, anxiety, or pain, and they try something that doesn't work for them, then you've kind of lost them, right? Because they are, let's say, curious enough to try a cannabis product to find a solution for those, you know, top three reasons why people come to cannabis for therapeutic reasons, and they try something that didn't work for them, or at worst, they have an adverse reaction for that first time, then you've lost that potential patient or potential customer. So I think having brands that are education first, they want to capture that first cannabis conversation, and they're willing to invest in educating both consumer, the bud tender, and the industry at large with the purposeful way of creating whole plant products, you've got this wonderful winning combination.
Well, and Pop and Barkley, obviously, with the Real Leaf Balm and with all of their transdermal products, having now moved also into solventless extracts and incredible concentrate products, award-winning, and edibles, which, you know, focusing on really the targeted effects for the end consumer, I gotta ask, does it kind of surprise you at the expansion that Papa and Barkley took and how, I mean, obviously not how successful that they've been because they just make incredible products right from the start, but more at how successful they've been in so many different categories from their original? Because obviously there's a lot of brands kind of expanded to different product categories. They kind of lose their way. Papa and Barkley didn't necessarily do that at all. So, what do you think helps solidify them in making sure that they are only taking an incredible leap forward with their approach to new categories in cannabis?
For sure. I think it's this fierce intention of doing the right thing, of being true to the plant, creating only solventless products, and then finding ways of what are the appropriate form factors. So, you know, from the balm to the tincture to the capsules and then patches. And then with Papa Select, you've got the concentrate, and then you've got, you know, the gummies with the edibles line, and then the P&B Kitchen, which are also solventless products as well. And from what I've heard, they've got some very interesting new product launches coming up in the beginning of next year. Which I'm really excited about. And I think part of it is about being fiercely protective about why you do what you do, mm-hmm. being purposeful and disciplined in terms of the approach, and not just doing something because there's money.
That is a big one, definitely.
Right, because you can't chase after so many things. You know, funding and investment is very tight within our industry. The taxation, that's such a burden for companies big and small. We don't have the type of resources that are available to us in this industry, so you have to be really choiceful in terms of how you spend what you have and be able to extend your runway as much as possible, because it is about relentless discipline and that, you know, what I really call boots on the ground type of business. You have to be willing to be at the street level, meeting people and having intentional conversations and being there in support of your stores, in support of your customers, so that you're standing shoulder to shoulder with them. So in the early days of the pandemic, I put on my Pop and Barkley gear and went out in the early days of COVID to let the stores know, hey, you know, we're here, our reps are here, our BAs are here, marketing is here, how can we help you with your business? Because, you know, right now when we look back, it's 2020 in terms of our vision, but in those first few weeks of the pandemic, we didn't know how it was gonna go. We just wanna make sure that our customers felt that we're always gonna be there standing shoulder to shoulder with them. So that level of commitment is, I think, something that's incredibly important in this community and in this industry.
Well, and I feel like Pop and Barkley is definitely one of the brands that has that commitment and that integrity, and I feel like they've kept it throughout the years, going from early days now into 64 days and into possible federal legalization to the future.
Sure. And then it's not a faceless company.
Yeah.
And it's not a faceless brand. You know the people behind the business. You know the people who are repping the products, and you know the people who are the customers and the consumers. So that's, you know, again, so fortunate for that to be my foray into the cannabis industry.
Well, and then as you kind of progressed in your career, you know, I got to kind of know what made you eventually want to take the leap to the next. I mean, it's got to be hard to, again, leave a brand that has, you know, that kind of soul behind their products and that kind of integrity with their brand.
For sure. I transitioned to Cannacraft around probably like late summer of 2020. There were a lot of shifts that were happening at Pop and Barkley, just to be able to run a pretty lean ship And so there were certain structural decisions that were made. So it made sense for me to be, you know, transitioning out and, you know, finding another opportunity. It just so happened then Canacraft kind of, you know, picked me up as their CMO. And for me, oh my God, you know, you go from one brand that is that has a foot in the regulated business in California, and as well as the unregulated space with e-commerce and CBD and driving the whole e-com part of the business for, from Pablo & Barclay, and shifting that into such an OG company like Canacraft with Dennis and Ned, going into a foray of portfolio of 12 brands across absolutely every single form factor, and fully vertical from cultivation all the way to manufacturing, sales, and distribution. So, you know, you pop into this kind of small protected place of Pablo & Barclay into, you know, 12 brands and fully vertical. It was a huge learning curve, and I would say that year and a half at Canacraft is some of the most valuable days I've spent in this industry. I learned so much about supply chain, which is very rare for a marketer. So during my time at Canacraft, I helped to launch with our teams 70 new products, 2 new flankers, and 1 new brand in 18 months. Now, I don't think there's any other industry on this planet that can accelerate and pace that quickly and have people on your team and in your company who are so supportive in that way to be able to make that happen. So when they say, hey, we want to be innovation first, we want to be out there with new products as soon as possible, and you have peers and team members who can pace along with you so that you can drive things quickly, it's magic.
Well, and I was going to say, I think that, you know, when you have teams that have that kind of legacy behind them, again, Dennis having met Ned because he was supplying him with wholesale nutrients at the time, I'm pretty sure he was his, like, biggest customer or something like that.
That's right.
And they're just like, hey, let's start Canacraft. But when you have people that are that close, you know, closely integrated with the plant, it's kind of easy to have that kind of passion for your work. And again, you know, the luck of having gone from one brand with so much soul and integrity to another brand again with Dennis and Ned having so much soul.
Who laid down the foundations for much of this industry.
Yeah, just incredible players in the industry. People who, again, give back also to the industry in a great way.
That's right.
When you're making the move from Canacraft now to Statehouse, like, how do you make that leap? Again, you're going from... again, these legacy players, these people who have done it for so long and so well, and now you're going to Statehouse, which is a large scale operation. I believe you guys have Loudpack, Harborside, Urban Leaf,
Sublime brands.
Yes, yeah, Sublime brands. I mean, just a ton of different products.
Incredible scale.
Yes. What made you want to take the leap and go into Stateside? Or Statehouse, I'm sorry.
That's all right. With Statehouse, what was incredibly intriguing is a fully vertical business plus retail. So cannabis retail is one aspect of the business that I didn't have any exposure into, because I went from brand to portfolio of brands to now, you know, Statehouse that has its own cultivation, manufacturing, brands, and then, you know, 14 retail stores. And if you think about, you know, being one of the companies and teams that had helped launch this industry, then you think about Harborside, which opened its doors in 2006, you know, being the first license in California to be able to actually legally sell. And one of the 6 licenses that were awarded across the U.S. So, you know, this history of firsts, you know, from activism to advocacy, just really fighting for safe access for patients. And also, I think at Harborside, I would say it's the place where brands were born and where brands were launched. Because if you are a really viable brand within the industry, you have to be in Harborside. and with the, you know, very elevated type of lifestyle, boutique type aesthetics of an Urban Leaf down in San Diego, we now have this coverage from bay to border across the state of California, from its incredible commitment to providing safe access to cannabis products, having those earliest conversations with brands that want to get on shelf, and also then being the stewards and the guardians for consumers who are coming in and looking for cannabis solutions, whether it's, you know, for good times or it's, you know, for therapeutic reasons.
Well, and Andrew D'Angelo and Stephen D'Angelo, the legendary brothers from Harborside, having recently, I believe, left the brand. I think Andrew's doing consulting now, and Stephen, I'm not sure what he's doing right now.
I believe he has a lot of overseas ventures at the moment.
Yeah. but I one thing I do got to ask about, because we are, you know, in the legendary Emerald Triangle of Northern California, you know, culturally the center of cannabis, Harborside having kind of pioneered the Proposition 64 era, a little bit of bad blood between Harborside and the legacy growers in California. I know that Stateside is working with the Emerald Cup in order to kind of help remedy some of that with the Small Farmers Initiative and stuff like that. Can you kind of talk about a little bit how Harborside is working on that?
Absolutely. So knowing that there has been some relationships that needed to be mended, and also I like being a bridge builder. I also feel incredibly privileged, for me, who's been in cannabis only for 4 years, that it's not lost on me that we're building on the shoulders of generational farmers who have come to California since the, you know, 60s, 70s, and have built lives and multi-generational enterprises. And I think they're really having a hard time, you know, in terms of cultivation, taxation, and just being able to survive within this industry of ours. And for me, looking at the opportunity to be able to support small farmers was something that I felt very passionate about. So when I had the opportunity to speak to Tim about how we as Harborside and Urban Leaf within our state house company can be supportive of small farms, I jumped at it. I said, absolutely, let's do something, because sun grown, I love. And, you know, it goes back to the beginning for Popham & Barclay with sun grown cannabis, falling in love with regenerative practices, believing in the stewardship and living soil, and how the diversity of strains and genetics are so important for our industry. I definitely don't want our industry to be like the tech companies, or do I want our industry to become like, you know, the Chiquita banana. You know, I think losing diversity and losing the healing properties to so many strains and genetics is probably one thing we should never, ever, ever let happen if we're able to prevent that. And I'm very lucky to have an amazing CEO who believes in small farmers and believes in diversity and believe in supporting the most important and probably the most at-risk part of our industry.
Yeah, and small farmers are definitely the most affected, and one of the things especially that's you know, kind of scary, especially as the states start to open up more and more and more, and we look towards federal legalization as a possibility with interstate commerce, and then out of country exporting of, you know, say Northern California cannabis, is kind of losing the brand identity for a lot of these legacy farmers that, again, help. So when you're looking at, say, the Small Farmers Initiative as a whole, I know this is kind of your second year, if I'm not mistaken, in helping the Small Farmers Initiative proliferate with your support. What is the future for the Small Farmers Initiative and the Emerald Cup, along with State House Is this going to be a continuing process that you're hoping is going to be long term?
All right, I love that you asked me this question, because there are layers to it. At the simplest level, being able to provide shelf space and promote sun-grown brands for small farms who wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to get their products on shelf at, you know, Urban Leaf, Harborside, what I would call sort of like Main Street cannabis stores, is something we can do quite easily. So we already have Swami Select back into our stores. We have Sonoma Hills Farms that's doing really well. They've come in, they educated the bud tenders from San Diego up to Oakland, and the products are doing really well and the brands are doing really well. So we've supported them on our social. We've blasted it across our entire email base to be able to announce them, tell their story. And so that's great for the sun-grown brands, as well as, you know, from us, from a retailer standpoint, you know, we're offering something that's very differentiated from like a MedMen or other retailers where we can have like a sun-grown premium regeneratively farmed section of our space. You know, that's an incredible differentiation for a customer offering and a customer shopping experience. So it works really well in tandem, and that's one stream. The second stream is, because we also are bulk buyers, we can help buy directly from the farms and package them and bring it into our stores under our own brands. And then the third aspect is, very quickly, as we're having further conversations in partnership with Emerald Cup winners creating like a judges circle of brands and featuring them on an ongoing basis in our stores also helps to elevate and bring more awareness and distribution access for these brands. Wouldn't it be great for consumers who are now able to purchase these brands when normally they would have to be here in Northern California in order to be able to buy them? So it really makes sense having these three streams that we're developing, so that it's not a one-off. It's going to be sustained. It's going to be something that's ongoing, and then we're going to build on and learn together, and in many ways regain trust.
Well, and I'm kind of curious with the education aspect as well that comes along with, say, sun-grown or light up versus, you know, a lot of indoors, especially in Southern California, a lot of people are... Well, and not just that, but I really wanted to say something more along the lines of the fact that people in Northern California are more focused on the totality of the plant, the olfactory experience, the terpene profiles versus, say, just THC, which is, you know, as an Angelino, that's kind of like the driving force in the Southern California market. You know,
sure.
What's the highest THC percentage? What's the biggest bang for the buck? With the education coming from Northern California into Southern California, especially having the two retail chains, how do you help kind of bring a standard of practice to bud tenders and help them educate, again, the sun-grown? And
we have over 200 bud tenders across our 14 stores.
Which, again, having an extremely intensive retail training for, say, these bud tenders on the importance of terpenes or the importance of the lesser known cannabinoids and how they work with the plant, how do you guys help kind of educate the consumer on the benefits of not just, again, the totality of the plant, but these regenerative farming practices, which I don't know if you've walked over near the Rage Lounge, but they have kind of the displays of the different regenerative practices that farmers do. And I don't think I've ever seen something in Los Angeles County that's even that would explain something like that. Is that something that you guys are hoping to bring into Southern California in order to help train these bud tenders on this stuff?
You know, across the board with our bud tenders, not only do they have foundational training that is, you know, part of our State House Skillshare, that they learn about different aspects of the cannabis plant and different product form factors, they're also, we bring brands in to educate our budtenders so that they can be more knowledgeable in terms of what's the intention behind the brands, what is the product benefit of the products themselves, and what might be the potential effects. And then also just the natural properties, like what you were talking about in terms of the terpene profile, the asters, you know, how is it planted? Are there certain regenerative practices that they're using so that depending on the type of plant that you've created, how is it gonna make you feel? And I've this week while I've been here, there's been a lot more conversations about strains that have certain minor cannabinoid profiles, like, you know, high THC, you know, dominant plants. How is that gonna help you to be more of like a functional consumption so that, you know, you can use that as part of a productive part of your day, which I love. You know, like, I love THCV. So products that have THCV in them and flower that is more THCV rich, I think it's going to be able to integrate better for daytime use.
When you're looking at the future of consumers within the California market, do you see kind of the shift happening more expediently towards looking at the olfactory experience in cannabis, or is THC still more the dominant driver for the consumer?
I think it really depends on which segment of consumers you're really speaking to. So you're going to have consumers who are integrating cannabis solutions as part of therapeutics, and then you're going to have different form factors with different types of consumers who are looking for relaxation or looking for that lift when they're, you know, going to a concert or going out. And so I think as an industry that's really starting to develop more complexity in terms of different segments of consumers, they're not one person,
yeah,
right? Sure. And like THC is also not one thing. And as we broaden that conversation, having more educated budtenders who are able to impart more knowledge to the consumer, then there's this incredible array of choices across a, you know, a broad spectrum of different form factors, different effects, different terpene profiles, you know, different minor cannabinoids. I think we're just scratching the surface.
That's fair.
And right. So it's a really exciting time.
We'd like to thank Angela for her time and being on today's episode. Find out more about Statehouse by visiting them online at www.statehouseholdings.com. Thanks for listening, and make sure to stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis.